Welcome back to this 2020 podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Keith. We have another amazing guest today, and his name is...
My name is Joe Towns.
Not only is he a fabulous actor, he has created something called the performer's mindset. What does that mean? You hear the word performer, and you maybe think of an actor on stage or an actor on film, but who else are performers? Is a CEO, someone who runs a corporation, is he a performer? He actually is. Now, an athlete who's on the field doing their performance, but now they're being interviewed, that's a performance too. How do you train an athlete to perform on camera? How do you train a CEO or a corporate executive how to perform? Because there's stage fright, there's things you have to say, you have to talk in sound bites, and that doesn't come naturally. Well, what Joe has done is he put together a program, The Performer's Mindset. You can take what actors do and you can put that into other areas of your life. Pretty much, he wants to make you a better human. Why don't we just get Joe on the phone and let's see what he has to offer you. And here we go. Hey, Joe, it's Johnny Keith from Actors 2020 Podcast. How are you?
Excellent, Johnny. How about you?
Great. All right, so the first thing is you're 2.5 years old and you're looking at the Wizard of Oz and you're saying, Mommy, I want to get in. So what does that mean? What did you want to be?
Gosh. Such a good question. I think that the experience of looking at a movie and not being able to differentiate what was real from what the world was probably what drew me there. But wanting to get in, it was this magical world and I wanted to be a part of it.
Ah.
I guess I wanted to make other people feel what it was that I was feeling.
That's it. That's it. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I thought you were going to say. That's pretty awesome. So then before, like, say, high school and college, did you do anything before that acting-wise that drew you, like, anything like that?
You know, there's a story about our family being upstate New York, and maybe there were four adults, and there was a Chinese bed, a beautiful antique Chinese bed, and I jumped off of that bed, Johnny, and I think I got a bunch of applause, and I kept doing it, and I think I wore out the enthusiasm of the adults, but I kept doing it, and I think I got hooked to that. I think other than that, I spent a lot of time singing with extended family. I wasn't a child actor. I didn't audition professionally. There may have been one elementary school review or something, but it wasn't really until high school that I got enough courage to go and audition.
Right, because like, high school is like, it's just freaking awkward. It's a lot of peer pressure, a lot of stuff going on. And it seems like, where do I fit in? The cool kids. And it seems like you discovered theater and that's where you found like, wow, this is my jam. This is where I feel like I'm me. I found myself. Is that right?
Yeah, it really was. I think I started to find spaces that I could expand into that I didn't know were possible.
Mm-hmm.
Feelings that I was allowed to have and trying on different types of roles and characters. It went with way beyond needing to belong was definitely something that I experienced. But I also feel like the theater and my teacher and community saved me from myself. Yes, high school is hard.
Yep.
I didn't feel confident. I was struggling with ulcers, fears about going to school, what that was going to be like. And it really was finding my voice. And it really was something that helped me transform as a human and not just be a cool hobby that ultimately led to what I wanted to do.
That's interesting you say that, because your whole goal in life, it seems to me, is to make people better humans.
Well, it certainly is a mission that I'm on now. And I think that it starts within, right? It starts with the idea of like, hey, if I could help alleviate one person's suffering, if I could make something a little bit better than I found it, that'd be a pretty cool day.
Yeah, that's cool. Hey, so what was your first paid acting gig?
First paid acting gig out of college was on a show called The Practice.
Yeah.
So I had flown back out to LA. My teacher helped get me an agent. I slept on he and his wife's couch amongst their dogs and had just settled in, got myself a 2002 BMW that was Kermit the Frog green. I booked a job kind of right away within the first few weeks of being here.
So great.
It was extraordinary. I don't think I knew it was supposed to be hard. I got to work with a director named Jim Frawley, who was the director on the Muppet movie.
Mm.
And I remember that was as exciting as the role. And towards the end of the first day, I sort of whispered to him that I was so grateful to him because of the movie he had created that I fell in love with, you know, let him know it was my first job. And he sort of announced it to the whole set. And I got totally embarrassed. They all applauded because it's my very first job.
So I interview like so many people who are on Law and Order Special Victims Unit, and I always have some cool story. Do you have a story to tell about your experience on set there?
A couple of them. I mean, one of them is the audition itself. So the audition itself, there was a lot of construction happening over at Chelsea Piers. Pretty emotional scene. You know, there's a few scenes, and one of them I'm sort of being held at gunpoint by this professor who has been set up by some of his students. And in the midst of it, there's just a tremendous amount of drilling that's coming through the walls. I remember we're in the second scene, my attention got pulled to how loud it was. I sort of got unhooked from the thread of the scene. And so I paused and I said, I got to take this back. And so I took it back like three lines and I kept going and I finished out the second scene and went into the third scene. And when I left, 100% convinced myself that I did not get this job. And the reason that I convinced myself I did not get this job is because it wasn't perfect.
Huh.
I was so surprised when I got the job. In some hindsight, the director was, you know how there are a lot of different types of ways you become a TV director. And this was somebody who had been on the crew side as a DP for a long time, maybe had some less experience working with actors, maybe more comfortable on the tech side. And so I think ultimately in reflecting back, there was a comfort that, oh, this is an actor that's going to take care of themselves on set. It wasn't that I was unprofessional and cut my own take. I was consumed with head noise or it was about my performance. And when I watch series regulars and leads on movies, they hold for plane. They take care of themselves if something is going on.
Mm.
I think that's a different nuanced thing than just cutting their own take. Ultimately, it was a pretty epic job. I mean, we ended up shooting in Central Park in the snow in the midst of February. There were about 100 and something cars and extras working with some wonderful actors. I think we had one take because there were squid packs and I had to like put in some stuff in my ears all over my body. They sort of came up to me and said, we'd really like to get this in one. So
no pressure.
put a little bit of extra into the job. That was one of my first times sort of needing to sort of deal with that level of heightened attention to the circumstances. Certainly my first time with squid packs and anything that felt like more dangerous on set that way.
That's pretty awesome. So I did like a little short film last year and you kind of just kind of forget about them, where I just got a call and it's screening today at the Chinese Theater.
Oh,
and I'm so excited, even though my character didn't have per se any lines. We did some ad-lib lines, but it's like usually I go cover red carpet events and today I get to be on one, even though it's a small part.
Congrats. That's exciting.
Right. So yeah. I'm thinking about you. You did Garfield and The Omen, and you said they both came out like about the same time, but those are actual movies that are like in real theaters. I mean, what does that feel like? Like, wow, I got two things, and that must have been like an amazing feeling for you.
It was an incredible feeling. Yeah, it was a period of my life where I had not quite had that level of consistent work up until then. You know, you can't really time when things come out when you do them. So it just happened to be that they came out around the same time. But I remember the first time that I got to like buy popcorn and go to a real theater for a feature that people bought tickets for. It wasn't a festival. It was a movie called The Majestic.
Okay.
And it was with Jim Carrey. The writer of the movie, Michael Sloan, had cast me in one of his short films. And it was a movie that he decided to make and direct while he was waiting for Frank Darabont to finish making The Green Mile.
Mm.
So Frank Darabont said, I'm making The Majestic, but I got to go make this Tom Hanks movie first. So in the meantime, Michael's like, well, what can I do in the meantime? So he put together an incredible crew and he made this movie. When The Majestic came around, it was right around the time that I was about to go do a festival in Paris and then go to the Edinburgh Festival in 2001. He called me and said, do you want to come hang out on set for a week and be an extra in the House of Un-American Activities Committee scene and watch Jim Carrey give speeches before Congress? And I was like, that sounds incredible. So I got paid to meet Martin Landau, watch Larry Moss coach Jim Carrey. And, you know, my work as an actor was non-existent. I was a background actor, but I got to sort of see the scope of what a film set could look and feel like and put some money in my pocket for walking around in Europe. And that was extraordinary. And my dad and a couple of my friends wanted to go see me in it. So we went to the movies theater the week it came out, and wanted to support Michael, of course. The moment when they all leaned forward and pointed, it was a big deal in my family, you know. And my aunt's always been like, I was a background for one weekend for like 14 different Toyota ads. And she started texting me and she's like, I saw your feet. I saw your shoulder. You know, she just, the enthusiasm, I'm really appreciative.
That's funny. I might be wrong and you can tell me if I'm wrong. So you have something called the performance mindset, and you think about performance and right away you go, oh, actor performance, you got to get in the mindset. But performance isn't just for actors, right? So say an athlete, he performs on the field, but when someone sticks a microphone in his face, does he know how to behave? When he's putting Instagram posts up, is he putting the picture of when he's rolling that blunt, you know, is he putting that on there? A CEO or a corporate executive, he knows how to run a multi-million dollar company, but does he know how to speak in front of an audience? And it seems like you came up with some type of system that works for all three. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because I'm really fascinated.
Sure.
About the tools you have for that.
Yeah, the performer's mindset is the idea that anybody is a performer. I know that sometimes people say that and they sort of are trying to make it true, but all of us have to get switched on and present for life's biggest moment. Gosh, that could be being present in a hospital room holding someone's hand as they transition. That can be having a meaningful conversation where somebody has just shared with you a secret. It could be getting into a plane and not feeling comfortable doing it after an extended period of time of not traveling. And so what do we deal with? We deal with the unknown. We deal with our nerve. We deal with a bunch of chatter going on in our head. We might deal with the idea of not being able to let it go afterward, you know, that we spin and spiral and all that. Those things, those moments before life's biggest moments and afterwards are something that certainly on the world stage that actors have to contend with, like you're saying. And whether the performance is on the field or in the boardroom or in a classroom, or it could be everyday living, we think that the thing that's going to help performance more at this point are those kind of tools. How do I deal with confidence? How do I deal with head noise? How do I deal with nerves? How do I work efficiently? How do I memorize in the 21st century when I have four scenes and I have to learn them in 3 hours?
Yes.
And so we've systematically created these programs that had hundreds of actors come through and tons of athletes now that have to memorize playbooks and have to stand up and do media training, as you said. And sometimes media training for them is pretty minimal. Stand here, look here, don't say this. The people I know that are doing work in this space are really training the whole athlete. They're really helping them be better leaders, better men, more thoughtful. They're trying to help them on and off the field. And I think that's our mission as well, is how do we elevate our entire community by offering tools that help with all life's biggest moments? Because I think artists have a lot to learn from athletes about recovery, about mental toughness. But I also think that athletes can learn a lot from artists about vulnerability and presence. And then what CEO or executive who has to speak wouldn't want to have access to some of those tools as leaders? And my thought is, why should all that be behind a huge paywall? Why should it be only the people that have billions of dollars behind their team or millions of dollars in scientific research have access to these tools? We all need them. There are artists and actors and humans that need these. So that's why the everyday component is there on our site, is we want to bring these tools to as many people as possible. Especially these last few years, we've found that people have said, this isn't just helping my craft, it's helping my life.
Oh, wow. And so you found a way to turn that into an actual business? Because I see over researching you, there's 6-week programs, 3-day workshops and all this. What currently do you offer?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we have created basically 35 different courses.
Wow.
Over the last 5 years. Some of them are systematized into a weekend intensive. Some of them are things that we would maybe teach in an afternoon and then unpack and train. We have ongoing training of the things that we teach. So our 6-week on-camera programs, and sometimes they're with a couple of our teachers. Sometimes they're with an industry professional. But I think we're in this moment where we're trying to honor one of the principles we teach, which is a pause.
Oh.
So naturally, in the cycles of the year, right, there's a winter. And I think so often our hustle mentality and our rise and grind mentality says, I have to do. I have to do, 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 do. We prioritize doing. We don't prioritize being. We don't prioritize recovery and reflection and visioning where we want to go next. So we are at a purposeful pause at this time because next year is going to be pretty big. like what we're attempting to do and what people hopefully will see that we are rolling out is going to be pretty ambitious. And so we're trying to, at some point, start to be able to roll out our content in a way where people can digest them whenever they want to and have them all recorded. But also, I think the world, as it opens back up, we have a couple of approaches on how we're going to start visiting some of the cities and artists that we've been meeting up with. Might look a little bit different, but might be able to still reach the kind of people we've been reaching in different parts of the world. So we're visioning that right now. We're game planning it. Every year we also do something kind of ambitious. We try to experimental, and growth mindset matters to us. So we try to offer brand new content. So once a year for a quarter, we'll offer maybe 6 brand new 3-hour classes that we've never done before. And they're totally experimental in nature and structure. And the idea is to help raise money for charities. We've helped raise money for everything from the Trevor Project to Color of Change Hollywood to the Asian American Journalists Association and USC's School of Dramatic Arts Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Fund. And part of the why we do that is because our community matters. And we want to value things like experimentation. We want to value inclusion. And we want to help the world tangibly in whatever ways we can. So those are some things people can look out for.
So this is online and offline. So to find out all that information, is that your website, theperformersmindset.com, is where they can get all the information?
That's right, The Performer's Mindset. And by extension, you talked about my mission being trying to help make people better. The reason that I launched the Better Podcast is because all the conversations I was having at The Performer's Mindset were behind closed doors. And so I really wanted to be able to have people be able to listen in and connect with some of these incredible creatives from a lot of different fields. And so I'm hoping that if people tune in there, they'll hear a lot of the principles we talk about at the company at play.
Okay. You beat me to it. The Better Podcast. Okay. You've been doing that for a while. But I have a quick question for you. Okay. So an actor, yeah. I mean, sometimes they put in less effort because they're not getting the result. Because anybody out there that's working a little bit is hustling their ass off. I know in the last 3 months, I've been submitted over 300 projects, probably done 50 self-tapes. The little bit of work that I've gotten is because I had to go do all of that just to get this.
Mm-hmm.
Say somebody's in a slump, they're in a rut. You know, they say practice makes perfect, but if you're practicing wrong, it doesn't. So perfect practice makes perfect. And you use a term called deliberate practice. Can you talk about that?
Sure. The term comes from an incredible researcher named Anders Ericsson. And I think a lot of people probably heard about the 10,000 hour rule. And the 10,000 hour rule really made popular by Malcolm Gladwell in his book, Outliers. Where are the pockets of people that are doing extraordinary things? What are their secrets? Well, it could be that they've worked 10,000 hours to gain mastery. And what Anders Ericsson said in his research, and that wasn't really originally part of that, the storytelling in that book, is that it's not just practicing. We can practice bad habits for 10,000 hours, but are we working while we're fully present? Are we practicing while the TV's on? Are we practicing and doing something that's hard for us to do, that's at our edge of growth? Or are we doing something that's totally in our comfort zone that we've done 1,000 times before? Are we practicing and trying to eliminate mistakes? Or are we practicing and then beating ourselves up heavily every time that something doesn't go well? Are we practicing and burning out? Or are we practicing and then reflecting and recovering and allowing the glucose to fill up in our body and have a little hydration and maybe a little mental rest? So there are tools around practice. We feel it's really important to cultivate. And deliberate practice is one of those types of practice. The idea of being purposeful with our time. You know, we've crafted this framework that's inspired by everything from the work of Carol Dweck, her book on mindset and growth mindset, as well as Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi's work on flow and flow state and getting in the zone. And so a lot of those were our early influences in the framework that we created around how we think about practice, how we commit to practice. And it's our idea that, you know, when we do intentional, deliberate practice, it's like doing a high intensity interval training exercise. You might feel pretty fatigued afterwards. That's not the kind of thing you're going to do 10 hours a day.
Uh-huh.
You might do it intensively for 15 minutes or an hour and a half. And then you might need to prioritize recovery. And what we're finding is this is what elite athletes are doing too.
That's good. So you say that there's something called performance routine, and there's 4 elements to that. What are the 4 elements to that performance routine?
Yeah. So I think that's referencing a framework.
Right.
You know, the idea here is we all know how to tell stories. We wouldn't be in the storytelling businesses if we didn't know how to tell stories. And so most of us want to tell stories better. So we've gone to school, we've taken classes, we coach. And those are 2 aspects of performance, but that's not all there is. You know, at a certain point, there's a transition between our preparation and our performance. And we think that for most people, this is shortchanged. I know too many actors that are concerned with lines. So they're just running lines all the way up to the point where they walk into the room. And so they're actually coming in and setting themselves up for creative failure.
Uh-huh.
Coming into the room already burned out and already sort of at a limited amount of biological and mental resources available to them. And I was doing it to myself for a long time. And a lot of that was in reaction to a time I forgot my lines. And so we prioritize training the waiting room, and we prioritize training the car ride home and what we do the rest of the day, because we think that what happens to us after our audition or performance is exactly what sets up the next time we get up to perform. So if we use that time to spiral out of control and worry about everything that we did wrong and beat ourselves up and try to imagine, should we keep acting from a place of being totally burnt out and dysregulated, we're probably going to have a little more trepidation or fear the next time that we get an email telling us we have an audition appointment.
Right.
So that's what we mean, is important to acknowledge the transition from our preparation into our performance,
mm-hmm.
and coming down from our performance back into our lives.
Right. So you got to be joyful, stay positive, stay confident.
Yeah. And if we're not feeling joyful because it was a complete shit show, like, okay, how do I deal with that? How do I deal with disappointment? How do I deal with, like, that didn't go well? Am I going to flush it and hope it never happens again? Or am I actually going to do something to try to, like, extract learning and meaning from something that didn't go well? Because when I look at some of the great athletes, they always try to have a victory or a learning or both. So we're trying to cultivate that awareness for artists to have something that they acknowledge that went well, that they had influence over, so they could build and train their confidence, and then something that they want to work on. And because we think that those two elements, support and challenge, is what fosters growth.
That's great. I like the way that you created these tools that work with science behind it, and you didn't keep it to yourself. Some people would say, why would I share this? But you're out there paying it forward. So thank you for that. So wrapping up here, is there anything else you'd like to say that we didn't cover?
Gosh, you know, I just want to say, first of all, thank you for inviting me into this conversation. It's so clear how passionate you are yourself about helping artists as well along the journey. And I think that more than ever, community matters and connection matters. And so whether we're finding those connections through coming back together and going for walks outside, or we're getting back underneath roofs and going into classes, or we're finding this community online, this idea of connection and belonging can be life-saving and transformative. And if you hear something in here that works for you, I hope that you will pay it forward as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the main goal behind all this, is hope that any listener and anybody who's seeking something knows that we can all rise together, and that we're all striving together towards this common goal, which is in betterment.
That's true. Yeah, better human. There you go. That's awesome. That's kind of why I do the podcast. It's almost like I'm getting free acting classes all the time.
Mm.
I'm taking notes on this podcast myself, and I have a little journal that I put everything in, and I love learning from everybody.
That's awesome.
So I just want to thank you so much for doing my podcast. It was an honor, and I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to enlighten my audience. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Johnny.
All right.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
ThePerformersMindset.com is where you can find out more information on Joe Towne. You'll hear about his story, his team, his training, testimonials, his podcast called The Better Podcast. He has some free offerings there, contact information, and also a newsletter. Let's give it up for Joe Towne. Awesome. Love, love, love all that valuable information. ThePerformersMindset.com. And remember, if you're looking for real estate anywhere in Los Angeles, whether you're buying, selling, or leasing, TeamReilly.com. TeamReilly.com. Call Team Reilly and start living the life. And this concludes season 6 of Actors 2020 podcast. Tune in next year, 2022, for season 7. Now time for the lesson. Bye-bye. Listen, learn, because here comes the lesson. Lesson 1. Everybody sit down. JK's going to take you for a ride uptown. Hey, yo, this is the story of the Hollywood game. Choose your path careful, you're the only one to blame. When it comes to things that you don't know, stick to the rules and just say no. Because you're young, you're eager, you want in the movies. Don't think you'll get there by giving up your beauty. They'll use you, abuse you, throw you out like trash. And then you'll discover that you're out of cash. Now your heart, your soul is somewhere on the shelf. And you're walking through the streets now talking to yourself. The lesson. Well, you heard lesson 1, it's time for lesson 2. You have a choice, and the choice is up to you. I came to Hollywood to be a rich and famous star, but for now I'm waiting tables and I'm tending someone's bar. Pictures, classes, agents, where the heck does it all end? Every time I turn around, I'm starting over again. I finally got a break with a 5 line and under. My life was
blast off, roar like lightning and thunder. The phone rings, hello, I'm cast in a pilot. My life's been out of control, just like an LA riot. I walked off the set, said to heck with this old man. The phone's not even ringing and my life is in the can. The lesson. Yep, final lesson here, of course it's number 3. Now remember, I'm an actor to be or not to be. When the going got tough, I climbed into the bottle. I'm back on my feet now, revving my throttle on the climb to the top. It's the same old games, but now I'm kicking butt and I'm taking some names. Clawing, scraping, screaming, it was a long, hard crawl, but it was all worth it. I'm a box off the straw, opportunity was there and I took it with a punch. Not now, baby, but let's do lunch. There's a big piece of pie and you should grab your portion. And you can be like me and join fame and fortune. Boom! That's the lesson. Go and learn it. It's the lesson. Go and learn it. Thank you for tuning in to Actors 2020 Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Key. Until the next episode. Bye-bye.